This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
Jeremy Cobb, but Joe Rowe the Inner Pro calls me Cobbzilla.
Cobbzilla!
Yeah, yes! Cobbzilla!
Yes!
How great of a name is Joe Rowe the Inner Pro, by the way?
Joe Rowe the Inner Pro. Inner Pro? Or
Inner Pro.
Inner Pro. Wow.
Yeah.
Man, that is very
Joe
good.
Rowe the Inner Pro. Yeah, that's really good.
As is Cobbzilla. I enjoy Cobbzilla quite a lot. I think I think you have appeared as Cobbzilla in my dreams a few times, you know? When we've zoomed each other, you know, every single day of a week talking about Dungeons and Dragons, I imagine that at some point in my dreams, a large building-stomping Jeremy Cobb has appeared at some point, you know? It's only natural,
A face and torso just looming over the horizon.
Yeah, a bit like a titan. The colossal titan from Attack on Titan. That's exactly what it is.
Oh my, the Coblossal Titan.
Yes, the Coblossal Titan, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So, a little fun thing before we dig into this week's episode. I played 26 hours of D&D this weekend.
That is a huge amount of D&D.
It
what
was, a
was the context
wild
of this?
Amount of D&D. I had two friends over. I hadn't seen either of them in multiple years, but we've been playing a campaign together, and we decided we were going to get together. We were going to rent a cottage or something at first, and then we just basically decided to do it here at my house. And we they arrived on Saturday, and we played all the way through to like midday on Monday. And it was it was wild, like being the DM for a session that long. Wow. Like, yeah. mental gymnastics.
Yeah, just basically, how long was it before you had to resort to improv, just full improv?
Well, I think basically I approached the session very differently, whereby I didn't do a lot of, like, specific planning for, like, moment to moment, like, or, like, this is going to happen and this is going to happen kind of thing. I basically just went, right, what's the world they're in? Let's fill out, like, this town and this town and this town and this town and that city, and I've got some people, and they're going to try and do this. They want this. That's their motivation. That's their motivation. And then basically they were just kind of dropped in the middle of it. And then from the beginning, pretty much, I was just like, okay, I'm basically improvising, but I have a rough idea of some things I'd like to happen and some where some NPCs are going to be if they don't interact with them or if they do, or et cetera, et cetera. And so it basically just went like that. But yeah, it was absolutely wild. I tell you what I did do. I bought like monster cards for the first time. Just like actual physical monster cards. And I can't tell you how helpful they were. Just visual cues for me. Because I wanted to like be able to throw in encounters and have them feel like they were alive and not just like I'm trying to force them over into like a woods or whatever. So like if we stayed in the city for ages, we could still have like a some sort of encounter or something happen in the city. And so I could literally just scroll. I basically spent a bit of time on Saturday and picked out a bunch of cards that kind of like, I was like, right, these could be kind of foresty encounters. These could be ocean encounters. These could be, you know, and then it just meant that I was like sitting there, they were improvising or they're role playing. And I just go, oh, this would be a sick next encounter, you know, and basically just sort of had those in my back pocket. And they're just the visual of them being there. And because then I didn't have to click off any screens that I had up with very necessary tabs, which made it so much easier for me to actually try and keep on top of it. So Really good. And plus, also, I just feel like I threw in more unique monsters. Like, I normally, I have like a very much like a go-to list of like monsters.
Oh, you have a stable, but this time you had to open the stable doors.
Indeed.
Let more monsters in.
Exactly, exactly that. And so there was quite a few weird and wonderful monsters that came out to play. But yeah, overall, a very, very fun experience. Great RP. A lot slower than on Zoom, actually, which was interesting. Like, when we know we had time and we were in person, you know, everything felt a little bit more slow and kind of, we really got to know the characters and their motivations, and they bonded a lot as sort of players. So it was very, very fun. It actually made me think, it was actually more fun than I think I anticipated, and made me even more excited about D&D at a castle.
Oh,
like,
wow.
If that was even possible.
Yeah. Did you play music as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had the full shebang. I had some lights going on behind me that I would change depending on the mood and stuff. We had battle maps.
Wait, do you mean that you had the full Critical Role Campaign 3 setup with lights and music that you could change at the press of a button?
Indeed, I did. Yes, Jeremy. Do you know, that's almost like a really perfect segue into what we're going to talk about today. Jeremy, did you plan this? Did you? Did you inception my mind and plant this story about me playing 26 hours of D&D?
Much like DMing, you learn to see opportunities to insert the thing that you want to happen. So
yes.
We get close enough. Cool.
Bam. Here we go.
There it is.
There it is.
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full prince vibe. Woof.
This makes them even more black.
Cake glitches and pitches.
It lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no.
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now. Speaking of Critical Role Season 3, Campaign 3, whatever it's referred to, we are back with a topical episode about said thing. It's been a minute since we've done one of these. Was the last one Fish Boy?
Was Fish Boy
like,
the last one?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe we've just had our finger... I don't know if we've had our finger off the pulse or if it's just been a slow... I think there's been a lot in the world, you know?
Yeah.
There's been a lot going on.
And I think we deliberately didn't do a TSR episode.
Oh, yeah.
We decided to ignore that little soup. Yeah, we were just like, nah.
That's not the broth we want today.
Yeah, we were not feeling that.
Yes. So, yeah, we're back to talk a little bit about... there's been a little bit of controversy, Jeremy. I don't know if you've seen it. The sort of first, I think... A bone of contention for some people involved the actual campaign setting for Critical Role Season 3.
Yes, their third campaign.
Yes, and I think the basis for this campaign is in the actual cultures of Southwest Asian and North African cultures. So it's very much worth saying that they are very much drawing from those cultures specifically and including those in their campaign setting.
Possibly even the region itself, I think. There's a jungle, which apparently also means they may be taking some influence from like India in that part of the world. Mm-hmm. But I don't follow Critical Role super closely, and I had not heard of Marquette prior to this announcement, but
yes,
I did some research.
Yeah.
Did you see the whole thing about the Marquette having previously had an apocalyptic event known as the cataclysm?
Yep.
I remember reading that and being like,
huh,
weird.
Doesn't sound familiar at all.
Clearly they had come up with this stuff like years before.
Yeah, way before.
I'm not saying
Matt Mercer stole it from us.
I'm not saying Matt Mercer has a time machine
and
to listen
somehow,
to Outlaws and Obelisks,
went
back in time and decided to have his own version.
But there's a reason why he's so good at everything. There has to be a reason. It's because he has a time machine.
It's because he's already played these sessions multiple times.
Yeah.
He's gone through multiple iterations of each session already.
In one version of reality, he was actually in Outlaws and Obelisks as
Tobo. That was really cool.
That was a cool one.
Yeah, it's weird though that we ended up having you play Tobo after that. that. I think he seeded that in our brains.
Yeah. He originally started through Black Halflings. No.
Puppet Matster Mercer. No, it doesn't really.
Nah, it doesn't
no,
really.
No. Wait, Matt Puppet Mercer?
No, okay. What happened? Anyway,
it's still a stretch. It's still a stretch. Please continue.
So yes, so Marquette is a region, southernmost region, which was referenced in previous campaigns, and I think there were characters and things that were from Marquette which were referenced quite a lot, and so they have moved this campaign to this region, which is based very heavily in the actual cultures. And it's worth saying that basically part of the decision, they had sensitivity consultants, etc., on board with this new campaign, and I think this is an interesting place for us to start. I think we can start here before we get onto any kind of other talking points, which is to say, yes. And I'm interested to get your take on this, which is to say, where do you arrive on this? Because I think there are two kind of interesting thoughts here. Sorry, did you want to jump in quickly?
Well, yeah, what I was going to say was, I think we should say, for anyone who doesn't really follow this, basically the issue with Critical Role, the issue that people had, at least, with Critical Role doing a campaign in a setting like this, is that every person on the cast is white.
Yes.
So they were doing a campaign setting that is clearly based on non-white cultures.
Yep.
And all the people in the cast are white. Yep. There used to be one person of color member, but they were removed early on for a variety of very legitimate reasons.
Yes, very legitimate reasons.
But since then, for the vast majority of the life of the show, it has been an all-white cast. And that is why people were, in some cases, people were upset. In some cases, people were merely very skeptical, saying that, like, this seems like a bad idea because there are going to be inevitable missteps. Some people are like, they should be using this as an opportunity to try and center more people of color. Mm-hmm. So maybe adding people of color into the main cast, or even swapping out members of the main cast for people of color, maybe bringing in a new DM. I've heard all kinds of different ideas thrown around.
Well, this is kind of where I wanted to boil it down to two kind of options, and to go even before they even like announced this whole thing, which is that it's quite clear that obviously they've been working on a source book for a while, because the source book is coming out like next March, and there is no way, I don't think, that they decided this like 6 months ago. Like, this has clearly been in the works for a minute. Like, source books that take a long time to create and write. So, and I should imagine that was a conversation that happened with Dungeons and Dragons, with D&D, with Wizard of the Coast. Sorry, that's what I meant to say. And so for me, and this is me trying not to speculate too much, but I would be surprised if there wasn't a conversation had in which they were like, look, whatever next source book we do with a new, like in a new setting, we want to have it in a more non-European
outside of the norm. Yeah, outside of the norm of your classic high fantasy.
And it's quite possible that in whatever contract they had going, that they already knew that the next one they were going to have was going to be with Critical Role, etc., etc. So there's a whole lot of things that could have gone into this decision, is part of the thing I'm saying. So,
yeah.
And part of me is thinking, as a person of color, I welcome this. I welcome the fact that Critical Role being the premier show, which is vastly more popular than any other show, and in some instances more popular than the game itself, which is truly wild, but it is kind of true. They have a truly ridiculous amount of people that listen and interact with that show. So part of me goes, wow, that's amazing that we're now getting that showcase, that there is now that we're now going to be showcasing Dungeons and Dragons in a different light. And, the artwork's going to be different. The look, the music, all of those things we've discussed on the show before is going to be different. And then, but then there is another part of me that, exactly as you said, thinks this is an all-white cast, does that decision then become tricky? So I want to know, kind of, where do you land on just the idea of them choosing to do this setting?
Yeah, I think it's, I am an advocate of people who are not from specific cultures or groups trying to explore those cultures or categories of people in TTRPGs and things like that. Mm-hmm. I, from what I understand, for some people, maybe not from a racial or cultural standpoint, but perhaps from like a sexuality or gender standpoint, those kinds of explorations can be very useful for those people mm-hmm. in learning more about themselves. But here's the catch. You need to be very careful with how you approach this stuff, because it is very easy to fall into negative stereotypes or regressive stereotypes
yes.
or just completely misunderstanding what it is you're trying to do. Like if you're a straight person who wants to play a gay person in a game, if you go into this game and you play your gay person in an offensively stereotypical way,
yep.
just because you think that's how gay people act, or every time they engage in any sort of homosexual activity, you are playing that for laughs mm-hmm. rather mm-hmm. than as like, oh, yeah, this is just this person is interested in this other person.
Yeah.
Then at that point, you are just participating in basically further harm or at least perpetuating negative ideas about those groups.
Yes.
And so I think that while I think it's great that Critical Role is doing that and that the biggest show in D&D is trying to diversify in that way, I think I would have potentially advised against it. Unless they were going to do something very specific to address the lack of diversity in the cast, I would have probably said, look, there are going to be inevitable missteps. There's going to be inevitable blowback. And while I don't think there's a problem with making mistakes, I think in a case like this, with this much heat on you, it might be a good idea to try and mitigate that by saying, okay, let's have Matt work on this setting with like another DM. I'm just spitballing because I'm not even sure what an elegant solution to this would be. I think Jasper, would you agree with me? Replacing any member of the main cast, while potentially could bring in more diversity, sure, would come with just as many, if not more, problems in 100%. Terms of backlash from the fan base.
Yes. And I think also outside of that, I think that it's a bit of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation with that specifically, mm-hmm. because I think because I've heard a lot of discourse about this, and I 100% am in the camp that as soon as they replaced someone, like actually long term replaced someone on the cast, which I don't think they should have to do. It's not in their prerogative to do. You know, they're all responsible for the success of that show. They are all a part of the show. Like there is no grounds of which for someone to just lose their job just because they're not of color. That's a whole problem. But like, not only that, as soon as you did, I guarantee you the same people that criticize them for it being an all-white cast would probably say, well, that feels a little bit like tokenism, that you've just plucked someone out of a job for no reason. It'd be very different if like something happened or there was an issue with a cast member or they had to leave for a job or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. That's an entirely different conversation. But if they just plucked Laura Bailey out of the show to replace them with me, everyone would be like, whoa, that feels a little bit like tokenism. It would be an issue. And not only that, I, as the person replacing Laura Bailey, would be utterly terrified of the backlash, because I'd be replacing someone who people love, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, Lord only knows. Look at the Star Wars community. It's the same, you know.
Oh my goodness!
You know what I mean?
They don't even replace people. They just bring new people in, and people are furious.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I fully agree. It would be tokenistic, in my opinion, specifically to say, "Well, we can't do this setting unless we have a person of color," and then they fire one of the original cast and bring somebody new in. That would be tokenistic to me. Now, I don't think that's what most people are advocating for. I know that there are a lot of people who have issues with Critical Role having an all-white cast to begin with, which I personally don't have an issue with, because Critical Role did not have a casting process.
Yes.
If Critical Role, I mean, look, they are a corporation at this point. Yes, they have been for years. They are a multi-million-dollar corporation. They have been for years. Mm-hmm. But Critical Role did start out of a home game.
Yeah.
It was a home game among people, most of whom had never, it wasn't even D&D originally. Yeah. But when they made it a show, they just were like, oh, let's take our home game and make it a show. Is it a home game anymore? No, but it still has that vibe in some areas.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge part of the appeal for a lot of the fandom, that illusion of it being a home game.
But I think even if you take the argument of the home game out of it, I think you still arrive at a place where you go, well, this is still a group of people who have jobs, who are, and this is their brand, their overall brand. It is these people, this list of people. And however that came about, like simply to just replace them or to get rid of them for no reason other than the fact there isn't people of color there, is for me, it's just regressive in the same way that it would be if, you know, I'm sure there will come a time or there will be people who say to us, oh, you don't have enough Asian representation or enough, you know what I mean? Like that you could level the same arguments about nearly anything that has a nearly exclusive group of people. Now, yes, there is a lot of all white things out there. But I think that in this particular instance,
which is why it could be argued to be a problem in the first place.
Yes.
Is because most of the big shows are either mostly or all white.
But that's exactly this. And this was a point I was going to make. And I mean this to level... I don't want to level criticism at anyone, but there has to be some reason and correlation as to why that is the case, right? There has to be some reason and correlation as to why that is the case. I think mostly it's down to representation. I think we're seeing more shows come up now and more shows become more popular who have more diversity. But again, I don't know. I don't think there are other shows that come close to being as, you know, all black, all Asian, all whatever, as we have with majority white casts. Like,
yeah, not even remotely.
Not even remotely.
Not even remotely.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean, this show wouldn't exist if we did.
Yeah, literally. Because we'd have been like, oh, cool, there it is. We probably would have just chilled and left.
Yeah, most of the people who are listening to this right now would not be listening to this if the market was already filled with black run or people of color, really black specifically, because we are a black show. But like, if you had all of these, if you had like 15 really high profile all black TTRPG or even specifically D&D shows, then this show wouldn't exist. And most people, we wouldn't have gotten as much attention as we did.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as we have. I have a question, actually, because you mentioned our show. I've been trying to reframe the argument to see if I can, if I just have implicit biases that I haven't questioned. I was trying to think. So imagine a scenario in which we at Three Black Halflings, rather than having two men and a feminine presenting person, because Unati's pronouns have changed. But rather than that, it had just been three straight cis dudes.
Yep.
Now, I think it would have been valid for people to say, hey, it would be good to have another perspective on your show. You keep talking about diversity and you don't have it in the makeup of the show. I think I would want to do something. I think that would actually be a fair criticism because it's like, well, it's in your show, bro.
Yeah.
I think in a case like that, what I would want to do is add more cast members in and make it like six black halflings or something where we have like we add like
so
three.
So unyieldy. Six. Yeah, my word. You could have gone for four or five, but wow.
The today I am joined by would be legitimate because we would just be like, cool, we'll have as many cast as we can. And we'll just have as. Yeah. But I think try and add basically more voices who fit those categories.
Yeah.
And be like, yeah, you're right. We're missing this input. Now, in the case of Critical Role, they already have a cast of seven.
Yeah.
They did start with eight. They did start with eight. And one of the people was a person of color.
Yep.
They theoretically, and maybe the boat has mostly sailed on this, but I don't think it has actually because of the current season. They could have added an eighth person who is a person of color at some point.
I think they did for a while, no? We did have, let me just double
they've
check.
They've had guests, they but had they've a, never a had long-term.
On this, I think on this particular season is what.
That's what I'm about to say. That's what I'm about to say. I think his name is Robbie Draymond. I do not know if he is himself a person of color. He looks kind of ambiguously tan, so I wouldn't say that he's not. I really don't know. Robbie Draymond.
He identifies as multiracial and indigenous.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah.
He is, in fact, a person of color. So they do have a person of color in the cast. And seemingly, the response to him has been very positive.
Yes.
And in fact, he was included very briefly, very briefly, but he was included in the video that was the prompt for us making this episode today.
Yes.
Should I go ahead and say? Should I go ahead and segue
into it? We can absolutely talk about this. I just wanted to very quickly say on that particular subject, once again, though, someone on our Discord pointed out, and I apologize that I forget the name, had they replaced a member of the cast with Robbie? Blood on the streets.
Yes.
That was the phrase used on the Discord, and I thought it was very appropriate.
I think that might have been Nandor.
Yes, I think it was Nandor. Blood on the streets.
Yeah.
And I think that that is...
And much of it would have been Robbie's.
Yeah, and I think we have to acknowledge where we are when we are talking about these things, because I quite often find that when we discuss kind of our idealized versions of things, I'm all here for it. I'm all here for like identifying what is the like best version of things that we could possibly imagine. But we have to also live in a sort of realistic world. And we have to understand that there are certain boundaries that are going to be in place, i.e. that if you have this huge fan base, there is a full cat royal rumble happening in the background.
If you've been hearing any like weird popping sounds in this episode, it is because there are cats. I'm in a house with cats, two cats, and the cats are feeling it right now. And they're like walking around, and they're having some good claw sharpening sessions here. And as we're having this conversation, two of them have jumped onto the futon behind me and both of them are fully fighting each other. And now one of them has jumped down and is attacking the blanket next to my foot. It's absolute chaos. It's amazing.
Anyway, I think the cats are telling us, let's move on and talk a little bit about this here little video that has caused a bit of a stir.
Yes. So recently a day or two ago?
Yes, it's worth saying that we're recording this on the 14th of December, Tuesday the 14th of December. So that is the information that we have on this hot and live topic. So therefore, if there is any more that is said in between this, us recording this and us posting this, then please excuse our ignorance. It is merely a time delay rather than a choice.
Yes. Okay, so it was 3 days ago. According to YouTube, they posted their cool little campaign opening title video. Mm-hmm. It's Thursday night. It's a new Critical Role theme that they wrote and recorded with the whole cast in this very elaborate video.
Yes.
That apparently spent 3 days filming. Mm. And
which is frankly impressive. If you look at the actual video, it's a well put together video. It looks very good for 3 days. For a filmmaker perspective, impressive. Well done.
Yeah. However, it's caused a little bit of a stir because, especially in the first half of the video, because it really barely comes up in the second half. Mm. By the way, if you hear thumps, the cat that was playing with the blankets has now grabbed one of her toys and is throwing it up in the air and leaping to try and catch it. So she is awesome, but that is what you're hearing. I'm a big fan of this cat. Everybody give a shout out to Yona. She's amazing. But Yona the cat is having a great time with her little stuffed mouse toy.
I love the cats are determined to provide us just the right amount of comedic foil for what could otherwise be a serious episode. They're reminding us of the shenanigans that we have to get up to on this show. Is this a black cat? I hope so.
She's I think tortoise shell.
Oh, okay.
She's mixed race. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
But you know what? You know what? As any black person, at least any American black person will tell you, people will tend to still assume you're black.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, please continue.
Yes. There was a point at which she had deliberately knocked it under a large seat and was like, I guess, challenging herself to pull it back out. It's great. This little stuffed mouse. Anyway, this video in the first half features segments of the cast in what appears to be a jungle environment, all wearing, let's be real, or what I think you could. There are two ways to describe these, and I think both are technically true, depending on what context we're saying.
Yeah.
But the outfits that are, I think, most Americans and possibly most Brits as well, I'm not sure, would tend to associate with something like Indiana Jones or The Mummy, or what is it? Atlantis, The Lost Empire. Explorer adventurer outfits, like 19th century, early 20th century explorer adventurer outfits.
Yeah.
they also happen to be the same outfits that white colonizers wore while colonizing various parts of the world, or parts of the world that are more tropical or have more vegetation of that kind. And while, look, if they had done this in another season, they probably still would have gotten criticism. The fact that they chose to do this specifically for the season in which they are doing a setting based on Southwest Asian and North African cultures and environments came across as being insensitive at best.
Yes.
I think, to most people, or at least tone deaf. Perhaps tone deaf is the best way. I think, at least in our Discord, and I think amongst us, very clearly tone deaf. This is something that, like, if whoever's let this slip through must be kicking themselves. Because it's like, guys, it's...
I think, yeah, I think, it like, this is one of the things that I think is worth saying, like, right at the top of this, which is that we, I think, are, like, having met Matt and having... like heard a lot of stuff around the show, etc. And it would seem from the reaction I've seen on sort of Twitter and stuff that I like to operate from a place of like best intentions, and I have absolutely no doubt that there were best intentions here. And I think that it is so from that perspective, I think it is absolutely worth saying you're right that it feels like a sort of a bit of a tone deaf and a mistake, a kind of an earnest mistake. Now, that does not excuse such things. However,
you got to call a spade a spade.
Do you know what I mean?
You done goofed.
And I think that what is interesting here is because they had sensitivity consultants, and I would wonder, was there someone brought in for this video? Is that something that was potentially just a blind spot for the creatives on this occasion when making a video like this, where maybe they didn't actually think to consult someone in this particular instance?
I think that this is an area where transparency would have been hugely helpful, because we have heard from Critical Role that Matt has spoken. I think Matt himself tweeted that he was talking to sensitivity consultants and working very closely with them. And I think I've seen one or two of them named, I think, but I haven't actually, they haven't gone into detail about what was discussed yet. And from what I understand, I haven't been listening to this season, but from what I understand, so far, at least from the people I've spoken to, they said this season doesn't even really feel particularly different in terms of the environment or culture than the other two seasons. It's except for one mention of a jungle. In fact, one friend said it sounded like they were deliberately avoiding trying to bring that in stuff in at first. Like, it, actually, friend of the show, Ryan, said that when he listened to it, it felt like they were, like, yeah, and over there's the jungle, but here's the city of spires. I just want to focus on the stuff that kind of setting agnostic as much as possible is spires and people in the spires.
I mean, even jungles. Though we've been to jungles before in Critical Role, like I did,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Which I think is it probably adds some credence to the idea that they're potentially just like if it is something they are scooting past, then
the cat fight has resumed.
Sorry, the cat fight is just it is real. There is gonna be blood here.
The other cat is named Yato, he is a hefty black cat, he's 15 pounds. Which is one stone, 1 pound, I guess, for Brits. What would that be, like 7 kilos?
Yeah, he's a hefty
for,
boy.
For most of the world. Yona is notably smaller than him.
She's giving it a go.
She's a firecracker, man.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I think that because I think ultimately, so I have a few thoughts on this, which is that I think that the, I think there are several ways that you can look at it, and I think that quite often we like to draw intention where perhaps it is not. And so I think I've seen some reaction, not all. There has been some really, really incredible points made, and where possible, it would be great to try and highlight said points. Because there have been some very, very kind of eloquent people who have phrased exactly why this is an issue, and you know, the references for these costumes, etc., what they mean, yada yada yada, and so kind of outside of that, I think that And I was sort of talking to this, I was sort of saying this last night when I was trying to sort of come to terms with everything and be like, well, how do I feel about this? Because I didn't, I will completely honest, I had a blind spot here in the sense that I watched the video and I did not pick up on this at the beginning. It did not make me feel like that. I watched it and was like, oh, that was a really cool video. And then I went on my day and then it was, after it was pointed out, I was like, okay, right, how do I feel about this? And I think I have to believe that there was no intention for the, if put it this way, if they intended for this, for them to be dressed up as colonizers, going into a jungle or exploring the sort of wastes of an ancient civilization and stealing all of their items, then we have a whole different conversation. Do you know
Even
what I mean?
You saying that has riled the cats up.
Do you know what I mean? Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that's. And but, so, but conversely, we should also say, them just straight up dressing like people, just random people from those cultures,
yes,
might be worse.
Exactly, exactly. And I think you've highlighted the core of the issue here, which is that what seems strange, and I think what people have pointed out very eloquently, is just why. Like what? Like they feature in their own clothes in some parts of the video. They feature in these clothes in some parts of the video. It doesn't feel like they're. And bear in mind, this is a fantasy setting. This is not a setting in the like 1800s, 1700s, or and they are explorers or anything. It's not like there is a reference. Like a lot of people said, oh, it's like Jumanji. It's like The Mummy. But what do those things have to do with Critical Role? Like there is nothing. There is no reference at all. And so. We have problems with, you know, potentially have problems with things like Jumanji or The Mummy in
or
the way
Indiana
that they
Jones
or
honestly.
Indiana Jones very specifically
in terms of what they're doing, like
it's
people
the actual
will raise,
content of what they're doing exactly.
Yeah, it, same thing with The Mummy. Like a lot of these are very much like, oh yeah. Honestly, you could probably criticize Jumanji for similar things, even though they're not stealing stuff. Except the way it's like, oh, this evil game that's jungle drums and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of like, hmm. Hmm. Yeah. Okay. But it's the fact that in Indiana Jones, he's the first thing we see him do is sneaking into an ancient temple and stealing an idol from it.
Yeah.
And it's booby trapped. And there are people who, even if they don't live in the temple, clearly live nearby because there are people he's chased by them.
Yeah.
And I think one of the other guys made an alliance with them so that he could get the idol from James.
And the depiction of a lot of those people are, you know, not great. In any way, shape, or form. And so I think that is where the kind of strangeness of this lies for me, is that, and this is what I think it happened, is I think they were like, thinking about the look of the video, they went, we're going to build this cool jungle, like old set, and we want to, and they went, oh, imagine these cool costumes that we could put everyone in. I think that is as innocent as it is. There is no evidence I have to suggest that they went anywhere near intention with this.
Yes. There. If you've been hearing thumps, that's because they have taken the fight from the couch and are now careening around the apartment.
It's now WWE style.
Yeah. This has turned into like that James Bond fight from Casino Royale where he's like
multiple
crashing
levels.
Through. Yeah. Yeah. Just crashing through all over
like
the environment.
Soul Calibur. Did you ever play the Soul Calibur? Is it Soul Calibur? No. Yeah, Soul Calibur games.
Yeah, where to, like you can punch somebody
through like a wall
and
go into like a new area. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So as the cats punch each other through onto the Critical Role soundstage, in which we see Matt Mercer in the full kind of explorer, kind of, what even is that hat? It's very evocative of Indiana Jones and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and that and Tarzan as well.
Yeah,
that's like the hats they're wearing in the animated Tarzan specifically.
Yeah,
It was. I think this is a place where it's like, oh, you guys have some biases that were maybe not examined. Because
I wouldn't even know if I'd say biases. I'd say just blind spot.
Blind spots, yes, is a better word. I agree. Oh, I'm trying to look for the exact quote because we had a conversation about this in our Discord, and there was a point where Gift of Gabes, who is from the Global South, mentioned that as someone from the Global South, it comes across as being very hurtful. To see people dressing up as colonizers and essentially celebrating that culture. And where I'm saying there's a blind spot is, and even for us, although I hadn't seen the video prior to hearing the commentary, so I don't know if I would have watched, noticed it. I do think I would have avoided using it for our show, for sure.
That would have been a conversation money, for sure.
If we had enough money to cut a full promo like that, I would probably just be like, hey, let's maybe not dress up in like colonizer outfits. That would be bad. But but there's something to be said for the fact that it just didn't even occur to them, because when they think of those costumes, they think of like exploration, discovery, exotic locales.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
And there we go. Exotic locales.
That's all
there
the problem.
It is.
Yes.
There it is.
They're like, we're doing this in an exotic place.
Yeah.
And a word that gets used, really, the term that we haven't used yet is Orientalism.
Yes.
And there's a lot of, I think, clear Orientalist blind spots, if we want to continue using that word.
Yeah.
In the fact that they did this in the first place. Now, here's what I will say. If one of them had been wearing the outfit and had, like, gone into the woods like, ha-ha, and then staggered out...
beaten up,
and everybody else is like, what are you doing? People look at them like, don't stop. Like,
even if they'd done like a thing where like someone started in a fantasy outfit, and then we move from sort of fantasy to like Renaissance, and then we move from Renaissance to this, and then we move from, do you know what I mean? That there was some kind of through and logic to the use of these costumes. I think it would have been left, like, I think there's a really, obviously, of course there is, there's a really great article, which I will link in the show notes, written by James Mendes-Hodes, which is called
James Mendes-Ho.
Dear Lord. Called The Giant Robot of Offense, which is basically his approach to creating content online sort of making media that then can't be perceived or used in a way that could cause offense. And it's really interesting.
Really great article.
A really, really great article. Very, very simple. There's also a video section as well if you prefer to listen as opposed to read through the thing. And I think that the essence of that is that you know, your kind of good intentions unfortunately aren't enough. And therefore, there is a certain amount of work that has to go into when you're putting something like this out. And I think that it is worth saying that for my sort of my money, the fact that this was an innocent mistake does not absolve purely, like not even purely because, but partly because of the size of your platform. You have to have an understanding of the size and scope of your platform when you do these kinds of things. That you have to understand that, like, the impact that these kinds of things can have, and therefore, and like how far reaching these things are. And it can be, and it is very hard, but that kind of comes with the territory. You have to be willing, if you're willing to accept the financial benefits and the influence and the success and the adulation, etc., and the ability to set up the Critical Role Foundation and spotlight other creators and all the amazing great stuff that comes with it. You have to also accept this side of things, which is that you can't afford to make these kinds of mistakes. And if you do, you have to be able to hold your hands up and say, this was a blind spot, we will do better. And and I think this potentially leads us on, I'll let you jump back if you have something else to say, but potentially leads us on to the sort of general reaction to this, because I think that this is something that is worth discussing.
I did have one thing I wanted to quote. I can't quote Chen, but from our Discord, I want to shout out Chen, who basically popped in and said, I think watched a little bit of the video and was like, why didn't they just dress up as their characters?
Yep.
And honestly, if I've looked at pictures of their characters,
none of the characters
look specific, which is another interesting thing that in a game that is in this new setting, from what I understand, only one of the characters, maybe two, are actually from that setting.
Yeah.
Almost all of them are new visitors to this area. Explorers, if you will. but even the one who's from there doesn't, I maybe it's my lack of knowledge, but nothing in the way that any of them are dressed in the official art reads as Southwest Asia, North Africa to me. They just look like normal fantasy outfits. And when I say normal, what I mean is essentially European, typical high fantasy D&D outfits. That's what they look like to me, which means that they could have just dressed up as their characters.
Yeah.
And we would have avoided all of this.
Yeah.
Because you could have
Couldn't have even been like soft touch. Do you know what I mean? If they were like, oh, we don't want to do like full cosplay of our characters because we want to center like ourselves in this video, that's absolutely fine. You could do soft touch. You could chuck on a jacket of your character, or do you know what I mean? Like,
if you took every single thing from the video, kept it exactly the same, but changed the outfits to be something evocative of their characters in those specific sections, I don't think we would have had this backlash.
No. And I think, then going into kind of the backlash, I think there are two very distinct things that is worth talking about here, which is, first of all, that there has been a few people online who have made some incredibly eloquent and very well-reasoned points. And I think what is, we all know, and I think one thing that I think is very, very tricky, is that on Twitter and other social media platforms, it
you
is
could just
nearly,
say Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. It's nearly
one
impossible.
One thing that's very tricky is Twitter.
Twitter. What is nearly impossible is to have a nuanced discussion, right? And when you bring forward a very cogent, very nuanced point, it is almost always taken completely out of context or taken as a complete assault or affront to the thing that you are talking about. And that makes these things so incredibly hard to talk about, because on Twitter and social media, that dominates our reaction to a thing. To the point where
the lack of characters as well.
Yeah, exactly.
That you can use.
And I found myself in a very strange position yesterday where I really wanted to come out in support of a friend of the show who had posted, and I just didn't know what to say. I was like, how do I honestly go on Twitter and call for nuance? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's such a futile exercise. It felt like such a futile exercise for me. Yeah. And I think this is a part of a larger problem, which we do not need to get into. But I think it is a complex idea, which is, how do we avoid only feeling comfortable enough to voice our opinions in these echo chambers like a podcast where I know that no one, at least in the immediate sense, is going to react negatively to what I'm going to say. Whereas on Twitter, I was like, I just don't know if I'm going to phrase this right. I don't know if I'm going to make the situation worse. I don't know if I'm going to make the situation better. I don't know if it's going to just have no impact or if it's going to, do you know, so you become, you get into this kind of like situational paralysis. And then the alternate side of that is where you're not in a situational paralysis. You make a very, very good and cogent point, and still you end up getting so much backlash and so much hate to the point where you have to come off Twitter or you have to ignore or turn off your mentions. And I think
start blocking people.
And I think whilst I think that this realistically is not something that we can affect and we can change, this is something that needs to be like, I don't know, legislative, like government level, and to get Twitter and like social medias to change their rules. But that's a whole different conversation.
That's
what I mean. It's a very complex conversation. What I'm saying, I think the one thing that we can do and the one thing that I feel like I needed to do is like, we have to get into the habit of going away, formulating our own opinions by looking at the topic as is, rather than taking online discourse and saying that is the, even if that is the overall opinion, because Twitter is real life. We can't get away from the fact that even though it's this ridiculous heightened version of it, it is like, it is, people are typing those things. It's not bots. As much as we want to believe that it is like evil Twitter bots that are saying these things, it's not, it's real life.
Like, yeah, for the most part.
They definitely are Twitter bots, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
We have to be able to go away and formulate our own opinions of these things. And like the discord on both sides, I think, has been disproportionate because of the Twitter discourse. If that makes sense.
When you say disproportionate, do you mean like disproportionately emotional?
Yes. As in, I think
like
that
people
like,
are getting super angry.
People getting super angry about any criticism of Critical Role, and then people getting super angry about the video, where I think that there probably was a middle ground here where Critical Role held their hand up and went, we understand what happened here. This was a misstep, et cetera, et cetera. And
yes.
But even, you know what I mean?
Have they done that yet?
No. But this is the problem. I think because the discourse has elevated to a point now where it's almost spiraled out of control, it becomes very, I feel like if I were in their position, I would be in the exact same position I was on Twitter for Three Black Halflings to be like, how do we even begin to unpick this?
Okay, so I have a few things to say. In regards to Critical Role situation, the nice thing is I would be stunned if this was not the case. They can afford and likely have PR people.
Yeah.
Which means that, and really what, and I'm looking at their page right now, I do not see any indication of this, which I think is disappointing. There should have been a comment saying, an official statement saying, oh, wow, essentially to the effect of like, you know what, we hear that there are some criticisms from people in marginalized communities who were offended or hurt by part of our video. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go away and take this under consideration and talk with people from those communities in order to try and figure out what the best response would be. Yep. But in the meantime, we hear what you're saying and we think we're not disbelieving you. Essentially, like, we are trying to take you seriously. I think at the very least, the very bare minimum, a response like that would have been appropriate.
Yeah.
I think also some of the issue is not, I 110% agree that Twitter, and this has been said millions of times at this point, that Twitter is just not the platform built for nuance. It is
reactionary, emotional.
Yeah, it's reactionary, it's emotional. They have short, it's designed for you to say small things, small, quick things. People are more likely to respond to like pithy comments or something that's funny or something that's really emotional or big and quick and to the point, rather than something that is long and nuanced and exhaustive. Twitter and exhaustive just do not mix. And so that is part of the problem. But I also think that a huge part of the problem is how people in general tend to engage in fandoms, because I don't think it's a social media specific thing. It's something that I have 100% fallen prey to, and I know that other people do as well. Many other people do, which is over identifying with a piece of media to the point where it becomes part of your fundamental identity.
Yes,
especially if you are somebody who was not. Somebody who whose interests caused them to be marginalized in school or in various communities. For me, that definitely happened. You then don't have as many opportunities to necessarily, like, you can become overly attached because yes. You're like, well, this, I really like this stuff, and you cling tighter, and people are like, oh, because you like that thing, I don't want to hang out with you, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's not just that. There are other areas. There are sometimes people who feel like, who are part of marginalized groups, who feel represented by pieces of media. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people just have a tendency to overfixate in general, or just fixate it very, very strongly in general. But essentially, you end up feeling like this thing is part of me. And any criticism of this thing is criticism of me, or part of who I am. Mm-hmm. And so you get to the point where, especially with when you throw parasocial relationships, into the mix, you have a situation where you have people identifying very strongly with Critical Role, which, let's be honest, a huge part of Critical Role's brand is built on their personalities.
Yep.
Is built on the people. It's, a group of friends playing D&D. So people go even harder into the parasocial identification with those people. And they're like, I love these people. They're like my friends. Even though the Critical Role people, even though they may appreciate that you're a fan and that maybe if you met them, they'd be really nice to you, they have no idea who you are. In the vast majority of cases.
Can I add something to this as well?
Yes.
Which is just, I think this is also a unique thing about like the sort of TTRPG space, and I'm sure it exists in a few other spaces, but generally, like, fandoms of this size don't have this level of interaction. They're not built upon this level of interaction. Do you see what I mean? Like,
you mean directly with the creators?
Yeah. Like, George Lucas does not give a single... you know, whatever you want to about someone's comments about Star Wars on Twitter. Whereas
I don't even think he's on Twitter.
Exactly. Right. Whereas the part of the building of this brand has been Matt and Marisha and Laura and whatever else on Twitter, engaging with people, going to cons, doing that, like, they are up there, like, kind of in front of the group. And there is a certain expectation of kind of interaction between the two, which I don't think happens in other medias of this size. There is no way that The Rock has this much interaction. Do you know what I mean? With all of his properties, there's no way that, like, it doesn't matter how kind of big or what kind of subject you want to go to. Like, it's a very unique thing. It's the same with us. And I think that there is an inevitability when it comes to the size of a community where you will attract people who have views that are not necessarily aligned with you. You will attract, like, I was literally thinking to myself last night, you could be a fan of this show because you like the main show, where you like, we talk about diversity and inclusion. You could like The Cub and the Caterpillar, which is really kind of like a very magical and fantastical world set in Africa. You could be a fan of Outlaws and Obelisks, which is like a gun-toting, western, exciting, fast action. Like, you could be completely different people and be legitimate fans of this show. Do you know what I mean? People mm-hmm. that would never get along in the same room. So therefore, like, that diversity in communities is always going to happen. So then when you exacerbate that to the nth degree by having a huge fan base like Critical Role, then everyone feeling like those people are some way connected to you because they are so close, or it feels there is the perception of being so close. It is always going to happen and was always going to happen. I've seen a lot of criticism saying that Critical Role has somehow curated this community. And I think that is a nearly impossible thing to say, because that is like saying we have any control over who listens and why they listen. We can't. Of course we can't. Of course we can't.
These are all such interesting topics.
I know there's so much more than we can. Like, there's like four episodes in here, I think.
I want to say first, it's not just TTRPGs. It's online media in general. Mm-hmm. It's a two-pronged thing. Part of it's social media making creators of any stripe potentially much more accessible by the fans. See Anna Gunn, the amount of abuse that Anna Gunn received on social media for her part in Breaking Bad as Skylar White. Mm-hmm. See Kelly Marie Tran for The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Her role in that.
Yep.
And neither one of those are roles that neither one of those are jobs that require them to have close contact with the fandoms. Part of that is just social media. And then the parasocial aspect of it is driven by online media in general, because this is a big issue with YouTube as well. Mm. It's a big issue with any medium that relies on personality. So talk shows get this. You get this a lot with YouTubers. Any vlogger, anybody like who makes stuff where it's part of the appeal is it's them talking to the camera, or you're seeing them do things. People will be like, oh, they're my friend. I spend time with them like a friend. Us, part of the appeal is people listening to, and this is not just true for us, but it's true for a lot of podcasts. People enjoy listening to people talking and laughing. People will openly say the fact that that little mess ups and laughter is not edited out makes it feel more real and easier to get into, because 100%. Now you're like, oh, I'm listening to a really engaging conversation between people who like each other and
who are
which
relaxed
is a fun
and
thing
who
to
are
do.
Just having a good time and talk about cat WWE.
Yeah, exactly. So it's which, by the way, they've both retired to neutral corners at this point.
It's not turning into the Cold War. We're getting into that phase. and they're just shooting evils at each other and threatening to launch toy mice at each other.
They're going to start cutting promos soon. I got to tell you, Yona, fire on the mic. Fire on the mic.
Just about to drop some heat.
Yeah, the pipe bomb speech, the famous, what's his name? CM Punk pipe bomb speech.
Yeah.
That's her, man. It's all her, her all day. but anyway, that is something that would have, that's something that happens, especially with online media and Critical Role being one of the biggest online media creators at this point. I mean, what, they made $20 million in 4 years,
something
which is
like, just on Twitch, I think.
Just on Twitch.
Yeah,
that's true. We're not talking about merchandising or anything like that.
Ads, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, very big corporation at this point. So that's something that you're always going to see with that kind of setup. But yeah, there's all, oh my goodness, to talk about the fandoms that you cultivate is a really interesting conversation, especially for me as somebody who enjoys Rick and Morty, for example. And it, last I checked, it seemed that the creators had fully disavowed their own fan base.
But this is the thing, even to bring it back, Matt did that on the show. Like, not disavowed, but like Matt said on the show how openly terrified he was of his own fan base for like making mistakes. You can't tell me that that is something that they willingly would bring upon themselves, is to receive this. It's like,
are there any multi-million-dollar properties that do not have toxic fan bases? Maybe there's like variation in levels of toxicity.
Well, I think it would depend on what you like. I think whether the creator perceives them as being toxic, I think that is different. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
Because then I think
you could be a neo-Nazi. Could imagine like a neo-Nazi group where they're all really nice to each other.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
It's technically not toxic.
That's what I mean. I feel like Joe Rogan probably loves his audience. Do you know what I mean? But I feel like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I can't imagine, although at this point, I don't even think Joe Rogan likes his audience with the whole Spotify controversy.
Oh, I didn't see that, to be fair. That was an assumption on my part. I'll take that back.
Yeah.
Sorry, Joe, I guess. I don't know.
But like, I agree with you. There's a difference between like toxicity, like that the creators perceive versus toxicity that everybody else perceives, or not just everybody else, but people outside of the specific groups.
And I would say from the conversations that I've had and from all the evidence that I've seen, including talking to people like from like NADPOD, for instance, I'm pretty confident in saying that the creators are generally on the side of most people when perceiving that toxic behavior. It is just that there is a limit to what said creators can do. do, because I have seen creators actively call out these people multiple times to very little avail, and usually all it ends up doing is getting a whole lot of heat pushed back onto them, which I am, as a creator in like who doesn't get this kind of heat at all, I can absolutely understand the want and need to not put yourself in that, willingly put yourself in that firing line. Like, I would never say it is on an, like, an onus is on a creator to corral their fans. It is not like, because unless they are actively choosing to encourage them or actively choosing to kind of rile them up or whatever in a particular way, then maybe I'd say, okay, yeah, you've got some responsibility to like calm down these people.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It gets messy because, like, you could say the same thing about a lot of people who like The Dark Knight and stuff like that. Specifically, I've just had like a whole conversation in my head. But essentially, let me backtrack. When you said you were talking about creators not really being able to control their audiences. And what's interesting is that was when you see specific audiences being drawn to properties, even if the property actually argues against that group. So you'll have you'll have groups like Fight Club. The people, the dudes who love Fight Club are the dudes that Fight Club is making fun of. But they so clearly there was a disconnect between how Fight Club was trying to communicate its message and what large segments of its audience actually heard. I don't know. I have to read more theory and probably talk to more people on this. I don't know where you lay the blame for that. Do you say, I mean, if you're looking at if you're looking at James Mendes Hode's article, then I guess you would potentially lay the blame at the creators for saying that they did not build the robot effectively enough, specifically the head. They didn't build the head effectively enough. Possibly. You could say Attack on Titan, a show that I'm a big fan of and I know that you enjoy, has many, many controversies and a large alt-right and or neo-Nazi following, even though I think anyone who has read or consumed the whole piece would argue, or even most of it, honestly, I would argue that it is very aggressively anti-racist, anti-fascist, anti-war, but clearly a lot of that is not coming across to some of its audience. The Dark Knight had people, some people took came away from that with like they were identifying with the Joker. Which is like, wait, I thought the Joker was supposed to be the bad guy.
Heath Ledger in that performance. But I mean, because my dude killed it. He slayed it.
He did. He crushed it. But
I don't know if I like the dude, the Joker. Like, he's not cool.
he's kind of a bad guy.
He's a very bad guy.
And there are umpteen properties you could name. A lot of people were criticizing kind of back in like mid 2010s when we were, everybody kept talking about like the golden age of television, and how every single one of these shows, almost every single one of these shows that were held up as like the symbols of the golden age of television were about like anti-heroic white men, like your Breaking Bad, your The Sopranos, your Mad Men, your The Wire, Suits, a little bit less. Well, I don't think Suits was ever put in that category, but I know The Wire is a more mixed example, but you still have the issue with, for the majority of that show, the protagonist.
Oh, I was thinking about Mad Men, not, okay, yeah, sorry, I was thinking about Mad Men.
Yeah, I'm with you
because they all wear suits.
Yes, the nominal protagonist of the show, at least. Obviously, you could argue the protagonist is Baltimore and the American system, sure. But ultimately, Jimmy McNulty is our view into this world for most of the show. And he is an anti-heroic white dude. People were like, hey, maybe these shows, and you, these shows tend to attract a lot of toxic male fans, usually, who are like really sexist, often racist as well. And they're fans of these properties, which even if the creators of the properties, Vince Gilligan openly said that the criticism of Skylar White and of Anna Gunn was sexist on multiple occasions. Was very unequivocal in how, in condemning those people. And yet those attitudes persist. And so this is just a bigger question that honestly, we should get somebody on the show to talk, who knows more, to talk about it, because I don't know the degree to which you blame the property or you blame the creators, because I don't know how you, I don't know how we cultivated
because that's the thing. I don't know,
the
like,
fandom
if someone,
that we have.
Like, yeah, exactly. If someone had turned around and, like, you know, if there was some pretty staunch right-wing views coming out of Outlaws and Obelisks, I don't know what we could have done or how we could have perceived like that when in the creation of it. Do you know what I mean? Because again, like, those kind of right-wing views are big blind spots, and I'm happy for them to stay big blind spots, to be quite honest with you. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to think about those things.
I think it's one of those what was I gonna say? It's one of those situations where, like, no, I lost it. Go ahead.
Well, one thing that I'm going to say is very, very not helpful, Jeremy, is when particularly former people who do no longer represent a company choose to stoke the fire by taking one sentient, very eloquent and well thought out point and sort of holding it up as some example to be kind of lampooned or criticized.
This is perhaps the least complicated thing we're going to talk about.
This is the
today.
Least complicated thing, and I think we can.
It's just straight up bad.
It's straight up bad. It's incredibly bad and honestly dangerous because there was a particular example. I'm not going to name names because I don't think there is any need to give any airtime to this particular incident because screw that person.
yes, a former member of the Critical Role family who left some months ago.
Yeah.
Quote retweeted a very eloquent statement by a friend of our show.
Yeah, a friend of our show and a smaller creator. And I think this is where it boils over into being slightly dangerous for me, which is where I go, you have to be aware of your platform when you have the number of followers you have the influence that you have. And what you end up doing is, in fact, you could risk someone's livelihood. Because you're then the level to which that fan base gets riled up and can be aggressive or abusive. You've spoken about this in defense of other people on the show previously.
Yes.
And that is what I find
and
so
weaponizing
difficult.
And this individual is weaponizing the fandom against, because they didn't just quote retweet the individual. They basically mocked them. They quote retweeted them to mock them. Mock her, really. Are we good to say the name of the person who
wrong? Absolutely.
Izza, who she was in our D&D celebration game. We're going to have a mini series that was already recorded by the time of this that's coming out in January. And we have plans to work with Izza further down the line.
Exactly.
But Izza's great. And she basically said, look, these outfits are uncomfortable. She actually was one of the people early on who was like, this is a bad idea. This whole season is a bad idea. This is a bunch of white people playing in a non-white space. And they are going, she's like, I could already see the Orientalism. I don't know that's not exactly what she said, but it was like, this is almost inevitable. The fall is inevitable. Mm-hmm. And that now that it's happened, she came along and said, look, I don't know how they did not recognize that this is very uncomfortable to see. Yep. Nothing. She did not come in saying Critical Role is a terrible show.
Yep.
She was not saying the fans of Critical Role are trash. She wasn't calling for people to like storm their houses.
Nope.
Nobody was doxxed. It was
all
she said was this
cogent and very simple point, which was clearly, it seems very strange to me that this point wasn't made to them when they were making this video. Simple.
Yeah. She called them out for having messed up and said, I don't even understand how this happened. None of it was hyperbolic in any way, in my opinion. And yet this individual, former affiliate of the show, then proceeded to sick the fandom on her, which is irresponsible, cruel, wrong. There's a lot of adjectives we could assign to this.
And the thing is, I'm willing to give grace to a certain point. But when you, like I said before, when you have openly spoken about how detrimental and or how aggressive and et cetera that fan base could be, it makes it so much worse for me because I'm like, you know, to some extent what you're going to do and what you are doing.
Yep.
And then on top of that, you are also in a place where you are you are perpetuating the very thing that in your in this tweet that they'd made about people being the left being oversensitive and criticizing the sort of way we do things, you're perpetuating that exact thing.
Yes.
So there is just a complete lack of self-awareness in this. The tweet has since been deleted, which again 100% clarifies that there was an awareness that this was the incorrect thing to take and try to defend it by saying that
and
they
were...
And
a small apology was offered.
I think it is really, really, really worth saying. Never, ever, ever try to distill someone's worth into the amount of followers, retweets, or likes that they get. It is a really, really retractive and completely dismissive point to make. Okay? It is utterly ludicrous. Barack Obama are no longer on Twitter. Are you going to say that he's not an expert and because he's not on, he gets X amount of retweets? It's absolutely reductive and pointless. And this is what came with the apology. And this almost made me more angry because I was like, so you've acknowledged that what you did was bad and you have doubled down and are choosing now to actively criticize this person for a lack of followers.
Yeah,
that really got me, and I felt like we have to get to a point where we do proportionate responses, and especially if you have the platform. Look, if some asshat does this, you know, who's got and look, this is where I will say followers are important. If someone does this who have 10 followers, I don't think it's acceptable. I don't think it's good. I don't like it. It's bad. But when you have 190 or something thousand. This is really bad and really unacceptable. And this 100% needs to be genuinely looked at. And you have to look at yourself. If I was to ever do something with our platform that openly called out someone in this kind of dangerous fashion, I welcome people to call me out. And I promise that I will listen in a calm manner and I will address it appropriately. And this is what needs to happen now and should have happened already.
And this individual also has a history of this kind of behavior. So I think that any sort of claims of innocence, they are already dispelled by the fact that this person has acknowledged the toxicity of the Critical Role, of elements at least, of the Critical Role fandom in the past. It's an absolute travesty. And honestly, I would criticize also Critical Role's PR team and the Critical Role team in general for not having,
that's the thing. I think they've absolutely heard about it at this point because
they should have said something.
Quite honestly, I don't know if the response, if the tweet was taken down and there was even an apology, if they hadn't already heard about that. I'm extrapolating, which maybe is unfair.
Who knows?
Retract that because it is extrapolating, and I've told myself that I will not do that anymore because it is unhelpful. But even if you take this on face value, you cannot deny that this individual made their situation so much worse, so much harder to deal with. This could have been a very simple, we see your comments, we hear them, we understand them. This now becomes, okay, do we say this person doesn't speak for us? Do we? Like it becomes a whole thing.
Because this individual is still a friend and in at least one case, a family member of people on the show. So there's still that connection. But you gotta, you have to pick a side. If Unati suddenly completely went complete opposite direction
to right
everything
field.
They
just wild.
Started popping off with some crazy views, I think would feel it necessary to step
say
forward
something.
And be like, hey, so we don't agree with this. We don't know what happened to Unati to cause all of this, to where this is coming from, but we do not agree. This does not represent us, that sort of thing. I think I 100% think that Critical Role has failed thus far in that they have not stepped forward to offer a statement of any kind in response, not just to any of the criticisms to the video, but to this specific incident itself.
Yeah. And honestly,
I don't know if the cast members ever said anything. I don't know if they did. I haven't seen anything yet.
Like I said, we're recording this on Tuesday the 14th. So if anything has changed by the time you're listening to this, it is just a time delay as opposed to us having avoided or missed something. And I think that the last point that I would make on this is, like, genuinely, I would love to talk to someone from Critical Role about this. Like, I would love to know, I would love to talk to Matt about the new campaign and the reasonings behind doing it. And because I do genuinely believe them, the people that are there, to be, for the most part, very good, well-intentioned people. And I think they probably took a lot of, if not most of, the correct steps in creating this new campaign, this new setting, etc. And I'm sure that I'm probably going to love the new book. And it's going to have a bunch of new stuff in there that I will love and I want to put in my books. And it will probably help to diversify the space if there is going to be genuine things from different cultures. And I'm sure that people who wrote the book are going to be from a diverse background, that it's not just going to be like Matt's book. Do you know what I mean? As was very much the case with Explorer's Guide to Wildemount. It wasn't just Matt's book. There was a bunch, a very diverse range of people who worked on that book. But I would love to have the opportunity to talk to someone about this purely on the basis that we can stop dealing in speculation. Because I think that's always the killer for me, right? Is whenever there's
discourse... The fact that they haven't been transparent.
Exactly. Whenever there's discourse like this, there's always ends up there being speculation. And we have now people sort of, you know, not like Izza or other people on Twitter who've made very, very good and cogent points on this subject. We now have people going to the extreme, you know, and saying things which I think are just kind of reductive and unhelpful. And we... And then we just going to end up into a mud fight. Do you know what I mean? And we don't need that.
Yeah.
We could just have a very simple discussion on this point. And honestly, I just cannot understand the reasoning. I know. I 100% understand the idea of wanting to defend your friends. I'm sure I can understand the sentiment that if someone criticized Jeremy, that I would want to launch to Jeremy's defense. But I cannot and I would not ever do such a thing if I'd taken into account zero, taken on board none of the criticism that was being leveled at Jeremy. Do you know what I mean? I would have to take that on board, process it, and respond in an appropriate manner, especially because you're in the public eye. It is a duty, because you're in the public eye, to do so. Especially if I was then dealing with someone who had less or smaller platform than I did. Do you know what I mean? Because then it becomes difficult, dangerous. I could be affecting someone's livelihood here.
Yeah.
And that's what I really, 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 really disliked about this interaction.
As we said, this is unambiguous. We hardcore condemn the way that Izza was treated, and hardcore support Izza and what she said.
Yeah, please.
And just in general.
Just please go check her out.
Yeah, go check out Izza. She's a TTRPG streamer, cosplayer, and generally da bomb diggity.
Yeah, you can follow Izza on at Evil Clever Dog on Twitter. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Go give her some support, folks.
Go give her some support, please. But yeah, I mean, look, this has been an interesting point of discussion, and I think probably not.
I don't know if you're hearing the cat yowling, but
I think I did hear that. I thought it was
Yato
my chair.
Is cutting. No, Yato has been cutting his promo for the past 5 minutes.
Oh, okay, and he's happy.
Very vote. No. He's upset about the way that the match went. He thinks the count was too fast. He kicked out.
He kicked out, but they
said he was pinned anyway.
Oh, man. Nothing worse. Nothing worse than sporting controversy. There's been lots of that, actually, recently. Shout out to any F1 fans out there who had to deal with this weekend. It was a struggle. But yes, I mean, look, this is a nuanced and probably ever-developing subject, and I think that always
we should have James just be a constant, like a regular guest on our show.
Yeah, I think
so. We
I think
talk
James,
to him about all these ideas.
I think
ideas.
We need actually, to continue the sport analogy, there is a thing in on BT Sport when you watch the football, when the referee makes a big contentious decision, they have a referee, like an ex-referee, in the studio who they kind of cut to like get their opinion, because there's no, like, the referees aren't like mic'd, so we don't really know what they're talking about, etc. And so, like, this, like, expert referee immediately, like, just comes in and gives their thoughts. I feel like we need James to just always be on hand to just A, call us out on any of our biases and bullshit, and then also B, to just be like, oh, by the way, what you're trying to say is actually this, and this is the better and more cogent version of it.
Yes.
Like, that's what we need, I think, all the time.
We just cut to James at the end of every episode.
Yeah, to do a quick summary of all the things that we meant to say during the episode.
Yeah.
We'll put it in a timestamp so you can skip straight to that point if you if you want to.
Oh my gosh, that would be amazing. What would we call that? James, the James Chinwag?
We could go with something like
JMHSMH.
JMHSMH, that's good. That's good. Okay. I was thinking of like a play on Adam ruins everything, but like James improves everything or something.
Yeah, James fixes everything.
James fixes everything. That's what I think. That's what I was going for.
James's workshop. Let's go over to James's workshop real quick.
Yep. Let's get a cut to James's workshop. James, can you hear us?
Please save this episode.
Please. We're going off the rails here. But I think absolutely we are but two people trying to sort of make sense of this situation from our perspectives. We've been having some discourse over on our Discord as well about all of this. And it's safe to say that I have differing views to other people that I have seen. And I would genuinely love to hear yours on this topic. So if you want to get involved in the discussion, please feel free to hop over to our Discord or drop us a message. You can email us at secondbreakfast@tbhufflings.com. We're always looking to broaden our perspectives, and we are very, very aware that we're only ever working with our own perspectives and our own biases. And much like Jeremy said in the episode, we want to ask these questions, check our own biases, etc.
And if you are the person who was formerly affiliated with Critical Role and you've been listening to this and you would like to quote retweet Jasper and I, my social media, but also if you're part of Critical Role and listening to this, we would just love
Please,
to talk to you.
Genuinely.
In general, because I would love to understand what the process was.
Yeah.
Because clearly a huge amount of work was put into this
and
video.
Yeah, and genuinely so impressive.
It's a sick video. Really cool.
If I had made that video, there would have been a slight, I wouldn't have made that video. There was a small tweaks that would have happened. if I had made something adjacent to that video,
yes,
I would have been super proud because this is a sick video.
Yeah. Yeah, from an artistic standpoint, in terms of just sheer technical execution, great job. Yeah,
absolutely amazing.
I would be happy to talk to somebody from the show and indeed that one individual. But if you want to follow us or angrily retweet us, you can follow me on Twitter at Jeremy Cobb 1, Cobb with two B's.
Cobb with two B's. Yes. And you can follow
me. Jasper, where can they find you?
Yeah. At JW_Cartwright. You can follow the show at TB Halflings everywhere, Facebook, Instagram, and the Twitters. And you can also find us on Patreon, which is patreon.com/TB Halflings.
We're everywhere.
Except for 4chan. We're not there.
That's true. Well, I guess you can't really follow us on 4chan.
I don't know how
it's
that
all
works.
Anonymous.
I think I've
never used 4chan, but I have looked at 4chan pages, and from what I can tell, it's all anonymous, which is how you get some of the stuff you get on 4chan. All anonymous.
Makes sense.
I think we're on everything currently except Craigslist. So
we can go Craigslist.
Can be on Craigslist. We gotta add that.
We can put some stuff up there. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll sell a shoe or something.
Honestly, while creating accounts for us, I had not realized just how many porn sites there were for us to just try and join those porn sites.
And on that note, I hope that you have enjoyed this episode of Three Black Halflings.
Pornhub.com/.
No. Oh, my word.
/DP Halflings.
Jade, if you're listening to this, please mute him. mute what he just said, and I'll allow the audience to dream as to what he just said.
You should definitely leave that in. That's a classic line.
And we will see you next week. So long, Shire Folk.
So long, Shire Folk.
What time is it? That is right. It's patron thanking time. I would like to give a huge shout out to all of the patrons that have joined patreon.com/TB Halflings recently, and I want to give them some thanks. It is truly wild, the amount of patrons that we are getting at the moment, and I cannot thank you enough for all of your continued support. It makes the biggest difference to us on this show, as I'm sure you've heard me say before, but it really, 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 really does. So thank you so, so much for all the people that have signed up, and if you want to get yourself some more TBH bonus stuff, then please head over to patreon.com/TB Halflings. But without further ado, here are the names of some amazing patrons. I would like to thank Amber Wilson, Joe Rowe, the Inner Pro Pro. Hey, we had your nickname today. Very, very cool. Talia Man, Summer Rose, Daniel Sotto, Mira Mira Cosplay. I know who that is. I know who Mira Mira Cosplay is. Hey, thanks for being here. Very cool. Dylan Irish, Tardigrade Sage, Dorian Black, Cal, just Cal. The New Experience Network, in brackets, Harrison. Laura Bram, Disble. Disble or Disblur? Anyway, moving on. Vinothan Sivia Palin. Very cool name. Ali Kathleen Fredrickson. Shimshon Adam Zivi. Brendan Watroba. Kayla Allen. Becca Tizard. David Fryoff. Justin LeBlanc. Ada Kinzer. EBK. And Justin Mitlina. Thank you so much for signing up to the Patreon. We love you so much. We hope you're enjoying all the bonus content. And we hope that you have a truly fantastic day. Bye-bye. I meant so long, shy folk. You know what I mean. Bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.